Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Well, there is an argument that you could go full Trump. Now, I know. Sorry. Guardian reader, listeners might fall off their.
Everyone in this podcast just fell off the chair.
That's right. But the Trumpian approach is damn the budget consequences.
We're just going for it.
So I want to grow the economy really, really fast. Yeah. Like, he is running a $1 trillion deficit.
Hello, good people of pods. It's Catherine Murphy, and you are on another slightly chaotic episode of Australian Politics Live. Today we're going to be talking about the economy, and I have Shane Wright to the left of me. Shane Wright, thank you for joining us, senior economics correspondent for the Nine.
SMH and the AIDS.
Thank you. That's always my preference too. And of course, the delightful and redoubtable Greg Jericho.
Oh.
What is redoubtable?
It sounds good though.
It's all right, isn't it?
I'm going with it. Yeah, I'm going to run with it.
Anyway.
Is that the opposite of doubtable?
Well,
I don't know.
Or questionable.
I can redoubt.
Isn't a redoubt
to do it again
a military term?
Redoubtable. No, I think that is a compliment. Well, I certainly meant it as that.
Redoubt.
Oh, well, anyway, the listeners will tell us.
I'm just thinking of the movie Zulu.
No, it sort of means it doesn't
Zulu,
mean
the
you're
final
a
redout.
You're a substantial person.
We'll go with that.
Anyway, Greg Jericho, my Guardian Australia colleague and man of facts and charts. And anyway, as discussed in slightly chaotic fashion, we are talking about the economy today because this week we have seen the latest GDP figures.
September quarter.
So both of these gents know that I've had, on the day that we're recording this, that I've had my head well and truly in the Medivac legislation, so I'm not burdened with too much information in this conversation. So these guys are going to tell me about the GDP and about the economy more generally. So Shane, why don't you kick off GDP?
Right. Big numbers, 0.4 through the quarter of September. Lower than expected. Market was looking for about 0.6. Annual was 1.7, which is roughly where most people thought. We had a couple of little upward revisions. But the main figure out of it is 0.1, which is the minuscule increase in household consumption through the quarter. Household consumption.
Oh, hang on. Did that happen?
So household consumption, 0.1 for the quarter. It is the worst quarter of household consumption since December 2008, and December 2008 was when everyone purchased some canned goods and went looking for a cave because the global financial crisis was upon us. And of all the quarters since the start of this century, there's only been 4 worst performers, and 3 of them were around the GFC, which is actually goes to why the Rudd government at the time was throwing so much money at consumers, because household consumption makes up, 60% of GDP. So if consumers aren't spending, then you're starting a long way behind the mark.
Right. And so picking up the story, so obviously the government was hopeful that tax cuts and record low interest rates would make the consumer less cautious. However,
no, they've decided to be more cautious and save all that money. The savings ratio rose
4.5. 4.8.
You're doing seasonally adjusted. I'm sticking with the trend, but anyway.
or you're just wrong.
Probably.
Higher since March 2017.
Yeah. Ratio went up. So we're saving more of our income. One little sort of stat to know to alert you to know that things aren't that good is in the past year, government spending contributed more to economic growth than did household spending. That only happens when you're either in a recession or it's GFC time. And so even though the government was quite chipper that the growth has risen, I mean, 1.7% is pathetic, if we're being honest.
Officially crap,
yeah.
I think is the word
I think
used.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you take away government spending and exports, which, you know, the mining sector is still doing well, still shipping off lots of coal and iron ore. But if you take those away, then the domestic private sector is going backwards.
Private demand shrank over the year.
Yeah.
GDP per capita was flat. So of five last quarters, it's been flat or negative, three of those quarters. So that's just telling you how much population growth is keeping the economy floating along and just how little impact is coming through from punters like you, me, and all your listeners.
Mm. Well, God, that's quite a lot to get your head around, isn't it?
Well, we try here, don't we, Greg?
Yeah. I mean, one positive little thing is that for the first time in a while, real household disposable income went up, but it only went up because of the tax cuts flying through.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go up because of the reason why you want it to go up, and that's because you're getting more income, you're getting better wages and so forth. The actual, if you look at the income in real gross household income, it was flat, and it's been flat for about three years.
Well, we all know.
So,
yes.
So the government is, you know, they both the Prime Minister and the Treasurer were crowing about household income rising, but it really was just as a result of the tax cuts, and that's what they're meant to do. But what they're then meant to do is to spur economic growth, and that is to come from spending. And what these figures show is that did not happen at all.
Yeah. Which takes me, I'm going to take you to
yes.
a theory of mine,
oh,
which
good.
I've been working on for some time.
Good. Yes.
So ahead of the tax cuts, you had young Joshua and everyone else saying, right, people will go out and spend. In fact, the Treasurer mentioned it in his budget speech, saying he was saying this, hoping this will, people go out and spend this money.
Yeah.
And even on the day that the laws, the tax cuts were passed, that was the whole theory that people will go out and spend. Now, that was based on the theory within Treasury that people would get the low and middle income tax offset, $1,080, and go and spend it. Economists thought, right, now we'll look back at what happened in GFC. Maybe they'll spend half of it. What I think has happened is that Treasury has not looked at what has traditionally happened when people get their tax refunds. And this is, remember, the tax offset is a refund.
Mm.
And as a boring nerd that I am, I've gone through the original, what happens in original spending on retail through the July to October period, going back the best part of the last two decades. You cannot see when tax refunds come through.
Mm.
People don't go out spend their tax refunds.
It makes sense, actually.
You
pay off your credit card.
Or credit card or bills, because often people get their quarterly power, water, rates, bills all come around that, but somewhere between July and October. So, and I went thinking, right, because my original theory was, right, people will get this and they'll spend a bit of it. And that's what Treasury is thinking. But if you look through the data on what actually has happened over the years, when all these, like last year, it was about $15 billion worth of tax refunds flowed between July and October. But you cannot see it in retail spending. It doesn't get spent that way. And I think that's where Treasury has got into a problem. Not problem, but that they've misconstrued what would happen
what consumers normally do,
when they got a check,
which was the Rudd stimulus check,
which was, please go and spend this. We want you to go and spend it. If you're young enough to remember, go down to see young Jerry Harvey. He was younger then. Go down and spend it and we'll get the economy going. This has been looked at and treated quite differently
and
by Australian consumers.
Do you think possibly, Greg, I quite like this theory.
Mm.
I'm
on board with it.
Yeah. I like it a lot.
God, you guys are easily swayed.
Well, no, but it makes sense, Shane. It's quite good. But
the air of surprise worries me too.
Wow. You made sense, Shane. Thank you, Greg.
Been on the back foot since Redoubtable in this conversation, let's be honest. Greg, do you think possibly, and I mean, it's obviously much more complicated than that because the reasons we're not spending at the moment are not to do with the lack of a government direction, right? This will, where I'm going will make sense in a sec. Mm-hmm. We're not spending because we're heavily indebted, because we're anxious and we're prioritising saving and trying to be less heavily indebted, right? But as Shane was just saying a minute ago, back in the olden days of the GFC, when Kevin Rudd brought us in for that special press conference on that Sunday with Ken Henry and various things, you know, it was very, very clear the message to consumers, right? Your economy needs you to get this check, go to Jerry Harvey or, you know, JB Hi-Fi or wherever the hell you want to go to and spend the money, right? The message was very clear. But Shane's right, Frydenberg did say in the budget and reply speech, spend the money, that'd be nice, please, that'd be lovely. But he's a bit push-me-pull-you with that message, though. He has said also, oh, I don't want to tell people what they should do with their money.
And he did that today.
Yep, you know, both
And this has been the problem, right, because they're sort of doing stimulus without calling it stimulus. Do you think that's part of the reason people aren't spending?
I think Shane's point is very good. The difference with the GFC was you got an actual sort of special payment. It was not part of your normal tax return. It in itself was special. It was like, well, we've got this new thing that we don't normally get, so let's spend it. It's not expected. Whereas you do kind of budget for a tax return. You don't know how big it's going to be, but you know, okay, we'll use that for whatever. It's kind of already mentally spent in your head that you're going to do something. And so the fact that a tax cut just gets blended into that tax return when it finally comes, so it doesn't in itself seem all that special. You kind of, unless you at the actual account, you don't know precisely how much more you got than you would have got. It's just, oh, I got a tax return, so I'll do with it what I'll normally do. It's a bit bigger than normal. But also, as you're quite right, coupled with that is you've got the Treasurer and the Prime Minister saying, oh, well, if you want to save it, you can save it. It's up to you. That's fine. And also trying to sort of suggest, oh, if you save it now, that's good because you'll spend money later.
Down the track or something.
And that's kind of true, but it means that spending is very diffuse and it's not going to have the stimulatory effect. And that's the whole problem when you've got a government who is frightened of saying the word stimulus because, in a sense, that admits that the wheels have fallen off and that they
are
under their watch. Mm. And so whereas the Labor Party back in the GFC didn't have that concern, they'd only really just been in power, so they were able to say, hey, emergency, break
glass.
Well,
they didn't have the luxury either.
Yeah.
It was the GFC.
Yeah, they had to.
It's the worst event that we've seen since
the Depression.
Whereas this case, there's no falling off a cliff. It's just a long, slow decline that's, you know, just
lemmings in slow. Yeah.
We're just mired in meh, you know.
And
but there's no sort of direction from the government of actually we need to do anything. And so people aren't going to think that they
need to do anything.
They're going to think, I'll look out for myself, which is save. And that's kind of prudent, but not great for the economy when.
Well, you saw it a little bit, deeper into those household spending, discretionary spending actually fell by 0.3% in the quarter. And Frydenberg was pointing out, look, there's been a lift in furnishings. Fantastic. But he didn't point out the fall in hotels, cafes, restaurants, which as a spend is much more important than new carpets and new lounges.
And lounge, yeah.
And it also, and this is it, you can feed off that in terms of, right, Murph, I can't take you out for a coffee today. I'm just trying to save some money, right? I feel a bit sad. Hopefully you feel a bit sadder as well.
Sad. Mm. Yeah.
And we didn't even think about Greg just because we can't afford to think about Greg. Mm. So you get that's where you get into those feelings that are coming through the consumer confidence readings, both the weekly from the ANZ and Westpac's monthly, which are, given we've had three interest rate cuts and Josh Frydenberg's throwing about $1,000 at everybody, we should be a happy bunch of little mousketeers, but we're not.
So this sort of leads us to a place in the conversation where I would say something like, so are we at a juncture where the sort of orthodox economic interventions don't work in this environment? Or that's a legitimate question I have. That must be really quite something for a Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, a Liberal, to say, oh, perhaps all these things that used to work aren't working is a bit of a problem, right? That'd be a big psychological thing to confront if you were him. But I can express that question a bit more simply. What do the figures tell us that the government should do in relation to the economy? Do they give comfort to the, we're bringing forward infrastructure spending, it'll all be okay, Jack and Jill, don't worry about it? Or does it suggest that more pump priming may be needed?
Well, there is an argument that you could go full Trump. Now, I know.
Sorry.
Guardian listeners might fall off their.
Everyone in this podcast just fell off the chair.
That's right. But the Trumpian approach is, I will give tax cuts, like the company tax cuts and the personal income tax cuts that he gave. Damn the budget. Yeah. Like, he is running a $1 trillion deficit right at the moment. Yeah. Like, it's the biggest deficit since 2012, when unemployment was about 9%. Mm-hmm. He's got unemployment down to 3.3. So the full Trump is, damn the budget consequences.
We're just going for it.
So I want to grow the economy really, really fast. And the Reserve Bank is saying we need the economy to grow much, much faster if we're going to get unemployment down to 4.5. And once you get down there, then you can see wages growing and everybody will be happy. But the full Trump is not something that can be countenanced by...
With a surplus.
No, you can't do it with the surplus. Mm. You actually have to say, no.
That's what I mean.
Stuff
Screw
it.
The surplus.
And
surplus.
We're going to say, we can afford this because, yesterday I think the government sold $300 million worth of debt that won't be paid until 2047 at an interest rate of 1.6%. Mm. Like, it is...
Money's cheap.
Money is absolutely cheap. There's the full Trumpian approach. These guys will never go down that path. But there is an alternative out there. But no one dare speak the Trumpian name.
What do you think about full Trump?
Well, I wouldn't go full Trump in the tax cut way. I'd go full Trump in the let's make use of the 1.6% ability to borrow money for 20 years. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of things we could be building and spending that money on. And one of the things these figures showed is that it was government consumption, government sort of just spending money on things, especially the NDIS and the age sector, that was fueling growth, not government investment. Government investment contributed bugger all. In fact, it's kind of been declining over the past year. So their talk of, oh, we're bringing forward all this investment, well, they better start bringing it forward quicker than it is, because it's kind of dried up. And if I was going to pump prime the economy, one, you've actually got to get across that, get out there and spend. Don't be afraid. We've got, things under control, which they're certainly good at trying to convince everyone that they've got things under control, but they've done it in such a way that it's almost like, but there's nothing to worry about. And it's like, well, if you want people to spend money, you've got to
tell
them to do it a little bit. But also
tell them why it's important to do it.
Well, it's important, but also at the moment they're still very much on the surplus trumps everything. And if that's how they're going to be, well, then we're going to be where we are.
I do have one question. Mm. It's the way that they keep talking about drought, not in terms of the economic impact, but the support that they're giving to drought-affected communities. And they're talking about it as if it's a stimulus. Now, drought is not like a GFC, which is a financial economic event. It is a climatic event. And I'm just trying to work out when have we ever talked about drought support
relief and stimulus,
as a type of we're doing our bit for these drought affected communities, the drought affected economy.
I'm
just struck by a bit weird it is.
Never in our
Well, we've lived through a few droughts. Well, exactly. The three of us have gone through a fair few, and I don't think Edmund Barton was talking about this the stimulatory impact of the
Federation.
Yeah, and I mean certainly the farm sector hasn't been helping the economy, but the non-farm GDP growth was still, you know, just below 2%, well below, you know, the 3% sort of long-term average. And actually the impact of the weak farm sector is actually less now than it was, you know, 6 months ago. It sort of is coming.
It's coming back.
Well, not coming back. It's just not as
it's not
big
as bad
a drag on the overall
economy. It's like the inventories. Inventories detracted a lot last quarter. Even though inventories were run down this quarter, that wasn't as bad. So the way you measure it means they actually contributed to growth.
Yeah.
It's crazy, these statisticians. They just make stuff up.
Well, they just, yes. Well, they just say that.
We've got readers who'll be like, oh, yeah. I'll get another email about the unemployment.
Sorry, Murph.
No, I digress. Let's not open that door. So really what we need the government to do in MyEFO, which is shortly, is to change course.
They're not going to.
But they're not going to.
You know that.
Well, yes.
So nominal GDP actually isn't too bad at the moment. So the budget, the overall budget bottom line right at the moment is still not bad, although you can see that they've got a few smaller issues around tax collections, but nominal GDP is still pumping along. But they're going to have to make some big corrections that will actually hit the budget bottom line further out, which is longer-term growth and wages. They will have an impact in 2022, 2023, mm-hmm, when there's supposed to be tax cuts. And there's a big drop off in the size of the surplus that year because of the impact of that second round of tax cuts. Just putting it out there.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, it's with the Shane is right in the nominal GDP growth is still doing well, and that generally is good for taxes and for revenue. Which, if you were, you know, if I was Treasurer, God help us all, but if I was, I'd kind of make use of that and go, well, we don't need a surplus. We can still balance, almost probably deliver a balanced budget. You know, now is not the time for a surplus because, you know, growth is 1.7%.
They are not going to be able to.
And there's going to be lots of bringing forward of infrastructure spending, careful planning, everything going. And it's like, well, if this was the plan.
Well, I'd be worried if they start talking about the aged care package as a stimulatory.
Oh, I know. Oh, my God. Well, we haven't fortunately crossed that bridge yet. All right, let's just in conclusion, we all agree, and we could all send Josh Frydenberg, you know, a short missive saying, "Dear Josh, gee, it'd be good if you could change course," and you guys do that regularly and
He's not listening.
Right. Okay. So let's not even bother. I thought, shall we all just send Josh our best Christmas message? But let's not. No. Let's think about it this way. If the government doesn't change course, what are the consequences?
The economy is still going to muddle along. It really will. And this is the problem. I always look at it this way. The RBA has said, we want the economy growing faster. We want unemployment at 4.5% or lower. So that means we have to run the economy much, much faster. You look at all the forecasts contained in the budget, which are predicated on what policies they're rolling out, you don't get within a bull's roar. And that's the problem right at the moment. We've got the two key elements of economic policy in this country are, they're shuffling off in slightly different directions.
Well, yeah, fundamentally different directions, really.
And you go, that's the issue. So the government is effectively making a choice. We will let the economy grow at a subdued rate because of our other policy objectives. And you've got Phil Lowe and team saying, oh, for goodness sake, guys, girls, get your act together and grow it faster. And this is why I come back to the Trumpian approach. He made absolutely, like, it's a bold choice, Cotton, to go down the path of stuff the orthodoxy. I want the economy to grow real fast, and that is a policy message that both sides of politics can agree with. We want to grow much, much faster, but no one's prepared to say...
Actually do the business. To make the trade-off, which
to
is
make
to
make a
say,
huge trade-off
look,
because we're in
the trap.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, and Greg, what do you have any fundamental disagreement?
Yeah, it'll keep muddling through. We're not in danger of recession. Our exports will keep us from going backwards, and the government spending on the NDIS will... you know, is not in any danger of stopping soon. And given their timetable, it's got a few more years of ramping up to go. So if there isn't any big significant change in the MIFA, I would expect another interest rate cut next year down to 0.5%. And at that point, then we start thinking about unorthodox monetary policy, unconventional methods. And
I can see Greg in Martin Place with a printing press right now.
Exactly. Wheelbarrow.
Wheelbarrow
with the dollars. So,
and, you know, we'll just keep going along, dribbling along, and we'll get to 2% growth, 2.2 or something, and there'll be, wow, things have turned. And really what we'll also be seeing is a lot more... downward revisions in our forecasts in the budget papers and in Reserve Bank's statements of monetary policy, which has been par for the course for about the last 3 years. So not a great deal of change.
Well, I'm very sorry in this episode that we haven't brought you much sort of advent cheer. We've just sort of had a massive downer.
Ho, ho, ho.
Go. Now we have a machine.
Anyway, but in very erudite fashion, redoubtable fashion, my guests have been superb in explaining the latest bits of the pieces of the economy to you. Thank you, as always. Speaking of superb, to our executive producer, Miles Martignoni, to Hannah Izzard also for Sterling Services to production. Don't forget Guardian Australia's Full Story podcast. I know a lot of you guys will have subscribed to that already, and you absolutely must because it's brilliant. Really get behind that. We will be back with you again next week with more ho-ho.
More ho-ho-ho.
Ho-ho. Anyway, thank you for listening.